Hi, this is Joan Michelson, host of Green Connections Radio. We are in the midst of renaming and rebranding our podcast and launching a completely redesigned website, so we're running some of our favorite replays in the meantime. Today, I'd like you to listen again to Tina Kirby as we talk about infrastructure and protecting against climate change. A key issue in that is insurance. Climate change, as you know, is wreaking horrible damage on all kinds of communities with severe weather and wildfires, and businesses and people's homes need to be protected. So listen to Tina Kirby talk about climate insurance. Enjoy, and we'll see you soon with the new brand as well. Thank you. Have a great day. Imagine losing your home and your business at once in a hurricane. This happened to one of my guests who lives in Houston when Hurricane Harvey hit, and they are still rebuilding from it. Imagine being one of the people living in California or Australia who thought you were living in paradise until the massive wildfires wiped out your home. You feel some sense of peace knowing you have homeowners insurance or business insurance, and then you have to argue with your insurance company because they claim your policy does not cover it. Really? Really? What is the point of paying all that money for insurance then, and what can you do about it? Last year, natural disasters related to climate change, including hurricanes, floods, and fires, cost over $150 billion worldwide, according to the reinsurance company Munich Re. And they predict it's only going to get worse, with more natural disasters as climate change hits more areas with extreme weather events. What can you do as a homeowner or business owner or leader to protect your property? How can you be sure you are covered for the type of disasters that might hit your area? And how does the insurance industry itself need to change as it finally wakes up to the realities of climate change risk? Today, we're going to find out from a woman who has spent 25 years in the insurance industry. So grab your notebook and pen and tablet, or however you take notes, and listen up. Welcome to Green Connections Radio, where we bring you insights and tips from remarkably innovative women, especially in energy, climate, sustainability, and corporate responsibility related issues. I'm Joan Michelson. We talk about innovation, leadership, new technologies, and careers, always bringing a new perspective. Find us anywhere you like to listen to podcasts and on our website, greenconnectionsradio.com, and through my Forbes blog as well. And please pass it on to your friends. If you want to grow your career, we also offer career coaching, so contact us via my LinkedIn page or Twitter, or drop us a note on our Contact Us page on our website. These climate change and insurance issues are affecting home prices too. As the risk increases, home prices go down. You can explore what your government and community officials are doing to mitigate the damage to your area from climate change, but you can't control the final decisions they make, and any action they do take will not even be in place for the next storm. So what can you do? We're going to find out today from Tina Kirby. I'd like you to meet Tina Kirby of Insurance Innovators, who, as I said, has spent 25 years in the insurance industry. She's handled policies for Beazley, a huge insurance company based in Europe that handles mostly business-focused insurance policies all over the world. They even cover six of the top U.S. hospitals as rated in U.S. News and World Report. Tina joins us today from London. So without further ado, I'd like to say welcome, Tina, to Green Connections Radio.
Hi, Joan. Great to be with you.
Thank you for joining us. I'm so excited. So I want to start.
Pleasure.
Thank you. So I want to start off with a few quick questions. What's your favorite book?
I change a lot. I have a streak of me that loves things like Malcolm Gladwell's explaining of statistics and why things are what they are. And I find that fascinating. And then the next thing, I'll be reading a detective book or a fantasy book, or it's a real variety. But that's kind of my mentality as well. I like a variety of different things. So I would say, if you want one name, here's one to look out for. And that is A Man Called Ove. Really interesting. Go with it. It's a good book.
I'll have to check it out now. I'm a book freak, so there you go. And who is your favorite innovator?
Wow. See, I don't put innovators in the bracket of the ones that call themselves innovators. I think it's often the people who are just doing a brilliant job of expanding the sector that they are in, and it doesn't need to have innovation in their title. Those are the ones that are underappreciated, but really doing the most in innovation. Unfortunately, those who have the title of innovation are often quite hamstrung by the fact that they're in a big organization and they can only do so much. So I admire those companies like the BlackRocks, for example, who are stepping above and outside of the comfort zone and changing a way a market thinks. And that's not a single individual. That's those who are prepared to stand up and say something different.
That's terrific. Yeah, BlackRock's CEO and their senior level team have really been out front on this, haven't they? And who
they have, and the combination of them together with Mark Carney and together with the UN, and that's when you begin to see the change. To me, that those are the people that I admire, because they've gone against a weight of their industry and said, no, actually, I don't think like this. I think we can do something more and do something beyond what we call the norm.
Oh, absolutely. And that's the proverbial thinking out of the box. And what they're doing is they're pushing, as you say, their whole industry. They're not just changing their part and getting, I'm sure they get pushback from it, but I was impressed that BlackRock actually said to their clients, we won't work with you unless you're taking this stand.
Absolutely. So they take the power they have and they use it and they were doing it behind the scenes with less effect. They do it in the way that they can to get the effect that they need. And the good thing was that was a benefit for everyone. So if they can get companies to take seriously their responsibility, i.e. you will not get re-voted as the chairman if you don't do this, then we begin to see a change that impacts all the way down through the companies and out into those around the companies and the environment that they're working in and the chains, the supply chains and the networks that they're working in. But the other end of the spectrum, you've got, you mentioned Munich Re, massive company, huge numbers of very, very smart intellectual scientists and engineers and intellectuals, and not weighed down by that, somehow also enable within that big group some really great innovations like parametric insurance, like this very relevant right now, pandemic insurance. So it comes in all sorts of shapes and sizes.
To frame the discussion, what are the top insurance issues and trends related to climate change that you see happening now?
So climate change and insurance is a really divisive conversation. And insurance begins with risk and understanding what risk can affect you, which is what you alluded to at the beginning. So that's who owns the risk, who's going to be impacted by the thing that happens. Then there's the advisors to those insureds, the brokers, and I say brokers in plural because often there are a number of brokers before you get to the insurance company, or also known as the carriers, and then you get to their insurers, so insurers buy insurance themselves, and they're called reinsurers, and it even goes further, they buy insurance too, and that's called retrocession. So when I'm talking about insurance, it's that whole network. So within that whole network, there is a huge difference of opinion as to whether climate change is real, even, and whether it is caused by man or not, and therefore whether things are going to be able to be changed. In short, the big problem is accepting if it's real or not, and then accepting whether they have to change because they still feel they can walk away.
Wow. How do they think they can walk away? I mean, is this the proverbial loophole that some of the folks that I've talked to have said they were in a disaster and they felt this peace of mind that they had insurance, but then discovered that their insurance was indeed not going to cover it? Is that the kind of thing you're talking about? I mean, how can they, you sign a policy, it's good, or are they just finding a loophole to not have to pay?
No, it's not that they're walking away. Well, there are two problems that you highlight there. Walking away is, it's an annual policy. So when you come to insure again and you say, yes, I did have a loss, I did lose my whole house, or I was in the area that was flooded, they may say, I don't want to insure you again. They haven't broken any contract. It's a mutual choice to enter into an insurance relationship. So that's what I mean by they can walk away, because their contract comes to an end. The problem that you've highlighted is, I'm afraid, it comes to the get what you pay for. So many insurers are only chosen because of price, and the cheaper the policy you buy, the less it's going to cover. But because of jargon, because of the Chinese whispers that go through that chain of brokers from the insurer to the insured, you might not always know what it is that you're buying. So you go for the lowest price because that's all you understand. But that might mean it's covering flood, but only if it comes from the sea, not from the river. And why would you think to look for that? And so this is a bigger problem that I think is part of why I'm moving out of being in insurance companies to try and help insurance companies to rethink their relationship with their insureds, their clients. As the world grew, as insurance became big business, they made a lot of money and lost a lot of money, but memories are short. The purpose of insurance has been slightly lost to that profit from insurance, and the volume needs efficiency, and that's fair, but it means it is an off-the-shelf, here it is, you take it or you leave it. And if I'm competing only on price, then it's a race to the bottom. And so for me to not lose money as an insurance carrier, I can only offer the amount or the width of cover that is commensurate for the price that you're prepared to buy it for. But that is a nonsensical relationship with your insured. Because when it comes to the problem, the insured is not happy. You're not happy. You're not paying for what the real outcome, the loss is to the client, and you're going to end up not having enough money to cover the insurance costs.
So if you want to find a policy that you can customize, because it sounds like there's little incentive to customize, even if you have the budget, if you will. But if somebody wants to find an insurance company that is at least open to customizing a policy based on their specific environment and their variety of risks, because it might be climate change related, it might be something else, might be earthquakes or something else, right? So how can someone find an insurance company that might be more open to crafting a policy that works for you?
So it definitely is possible. And I think that the answer to that is try to be more in control of it rather than be controlled by the process. So say to your broker, it's not about price, it's about cover. I want something that fits me so that when the problem happens, I have got the cover I need. And don't sell me everything, because maybe I don't have a wildfire problem. I just have a flood and an ice problem. So don't sell me everything. Sell me what I need and find me something that is what I need, and then show me the prices for those options. And if your broker says, well, there's only one option, choose a different broker. There are hundreds of different insurers, but not all the brokers have got the time, the energy, or the knowledge to go find the different insurers. The coverages are incredibly diverse and unexpected. And the ones people talk about are insuring footballers' legs and pianists' hands. But you're also insuring patents, and you're insuring overseas trade contracts, and you're insuring kidnap. You're insuring variety of very unusual things. So if a broker says that's not available, I'm always skeptical.
Oh, that's good to know. So you mentioned the complexity of the language of insurance policies. Is there any kind of rule of thumb for translating these policies at all?
So there's a movement that started a long time ago around called Plain English, and there are a lot of insurers that use Plain English instead of insurance jargon in their policies, and say to them, "Do you do policies in Plain English? And send me a copy of that policy." Especially if you're a business, I think. And then if you are a business and going through a broker rather than doing for personal purchasing online, then the broker's job is to make that comprehensible to you and to do a comparison. You should absolutely have a broker that can compare four or five different potentially useful policies to give you the pros and cons.
Great advice. So what step can we take when the insurance company tells us after a natural disaster, like my friend Katie faced in Houston, that we are not covered? How can we find a way to get covered? How can we manage whatever loophole they're pretending exists? I mean, what can we reply with instead of okay? Because it's not okay, right? How do we fight back? Do we go to the insurance commission? Who do we go to, and how does that work?
So I think the first thing to do is understand why. My favorite word in the whole of the English language is why. I use it a lot, and it uncovers so many things. So why are you saying that this is not covered? Show me the language that you are using to decide that my loss is not covered. Why do you think my loss looks like that? Is it a form I filled in? Maybe you didn't ask for the right information. Maybe I didn't give you the right information. So why do you think it's not covered? Based on what are you saying it's not covered? And if you can get that, then you can begin to either push back and say, the information you have is wrong, the assumptions that you've made are wrong. A local example to me is a river flooded, and they assumed that I would also be flooded. But I luckily am on a sort of a little hillock, and I have about 3 foot height on all of my neighbors. And they had assumed, because simple volume means they don't look at individual houses or businesses, they look at the area, that all of the area had been flooded to the same degree. But if you don't take no for an answer and you go into the why and show them the evidence, then they will listen. They have to listen, and they generally will listen. And you may have some progress there. If what they are saying is it's not covered because it was a hailstorm and your policy excluded hail, then that is very hard to argue with. But you may have a route to say, I believed it covered hail. My broker told me it covered hail, or everybody else around me, so a peer comparison, has got hail covered. So why do you think you cannot include hail? But if the contract says no hail, then that's a very clear black and white problem. And then at that point, and Texas would probably be the first to do this, it would go to the court to say, this was why I made the assumption, this was what I paid the money for. If it isn't covered in there, somebody has not been clear to me. And so I would need to have compensation for that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great advice. That's really good.
But when you think about what you are claiming from an insurance perspective, it's partly the property damage, but it's largely also your business interruption. So your lack of sales, your lack of being able to produce things, of being able to distribute things. And if your building is a fantastic 5-star weather-resistant building, that is totally irrelevant if all of your community around you is not. You won't have employees, you won't have visitors, you won't have guests if you're a hotel or a gym, you won't have the bridges and roads if you're distributing. You need to work together as a city with businesses, residences, and the voting populace needs to get behind and lobby for some of these nastier concepts to actually become science-backed proper projects that have a long-term beneficial output for everyone who lives together there. Because if they don't, then actually gradually residents move away, businesses move away, cities die off. They live on tax income, residence income, and tourist income. Mm-hmm. If no one's going there and no one's working there, there's not going to be much city left in the future. So it is in everyone's interest to do it, but it's really hard to get over that.
The other thing that comes up is, therefore, if you can create a movement within your community, partner with your chamber of commerce or whatever, to get people together to say, hey, I'm dealing with this, or you, and I'm sure you get, you know, a dozen to 30 heads bobbing, say, you know, let's get together on this and A, make the city do something about it, and B, get the insurance companies to respond to us, because we are now en masse. It's not just me. It's not just a David versus Goliath. It's the entire community.
Absolutely. There's a great part of Houston called Woodland Heights, who have a fantastically organized and well-prepared community. And they have not suffered nearly as much as anybody else from the flooding. And really the issue is what floods from their neighboring communities into them. But they get the benefit of that because, of course, everyone can see their loss record is good, better, and they can prove that they have raised their carports, they have raised their houses, they have done all the right mitigating factors, in other words. And so you can do it as a community, and you can do it as a business community as well in business parks. And it isn't just about natural weather conditions either. We're also talking about security, talking about cybersecurity as well. Mm-hmm. All of these issues, you're stronger together, and you have a message that you can then deliver to your insurer to say, you recognize the risk and I've done this about it, and therefore treat me differently.
Exactly. And in fact, I've all listeners who are listening to this, I've interviewed many people who work in climate change resilience, and they can listen to any of a number of them, Rawlings Miller of WSP, or Catherine Burgess of the Urban Land Institute, or I think Kathy McLeod of the Atlanta Council Resilience Center. I mean, there's lots of people working, doing this kind of work. But if you want kind of a primer and some resources, just go to our website and put in climate change or resilience, and you should get a whole bunch of them, or reach out to us and we can help you find those, because there is a lot going on. And then you can also use them as a model and go to your city and say, hey, these communities are doing this. And the other part is, even if you don't, you started this by saying that there are people who still don't believe in climate change, and so they don't worry about it. But even if you don't believe in climate change, you're still making your community better by taking these actions. It's like Elon Musk says, even if you don't believe in climate change, you're still creating cool new energy sources, making the world a better place, and increasing the efficiency of your life and your business. So there's really kind of in creating jobs. So there's kind of no downside. So before I ask you my last question, you've sort of done this a little bit, but let's see, what would be three tips, if you can synthesize it down, what would be three tips for getting a new insurance policy? Would it be customized? Would it be, I love your question of why, but it what besides making a list of what you are actually insuring, tell us what tips might be.
So I would say there are three steps. So one is understand the risk that you face, which is not quite as simple as it sounds, especially if you're running foot to the pedal to get a business going or keeping it going. It's hard to imagine all of those things that haven't ever happened to you yet, but they are happening to your peers around you. So understand the risks that face those that are like you. The second is then assess how much that is, how much impact that might have on you. So the quantum of it. So how frequently would this thing likely to happen? And then if it did happen, is that an existential bankrupting type problem, or is it an annoying, time-consuming, but not hugely valuable problem? And then thirdly, what do I do about it? And insurance is only one, what do I do about it? You can mitigate your risk in many ways. You can prevent things, you can train yourself better, you can have disaster recovery, business continuity. These things, they're almost at the bottom of everyone's list in terms of interest and attention. These are the things that will keep you going when the unexpected happens to you. One of the outcomes is, I've done my assessment, I've seen the things that are going to impact me, I've mitigated as much as I can, but A, B, and C are massive. And if they happen, I'm not going to be able to survive. Those I buy insurance for. And so then I take that knowledge I have to a smart broker and I say, key there, smart broker. So not someone who says, buy this because I have this. Someone who says, I've heard you. This is what you need. It fits your issue. And you say, these are the three things that I think would be too big for me to manage. So tell me the ways in which I can transfer that risk. And if they give you one or a quick answer, make them bill again. It's their job. You're paying them. You don't think you're paying your broker, but part of your insurance premium goes to the broker. So you are paying them to do that research for you in a world that you don't understand well, and they do. So make them do the job, do a comparison, and solve those big three that you've identified. That would be my tip to getting insurance that's the right stuff for you, that really will enable your business and your life to be less stressful and more productive. So it is a business enabler rather than a cost.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Just really quickly, how would one go about finding, as you say, a smart broker? Because there are a billion brokers out there. How can we tell them apart? Are there any particular things to look for in their, I mean, we could ask people that we know, but somebody's idea of a smart broker might not be yours.
Yeah, and I can't give you a foolproof way to find it out. I think you could look on their profile and see what kinds of insurance they do. So if they do one, then they're probably not going to be very lateral thinking. And you know, one of the essences to being innovative and creative is to be able to think in multiple directions. I will say that a female broker is probably going to be better than a male broker. Huge generalization. This is going from personal experience. Women are better at making connections between different things and then saying, because you mentioned X, I think that Y is going to be the real answer for you. Whereas I have found that men tend to follow a path of, you want property insurance, here's property insurance. Well, actually, I don't own much property. What I'm really worried about is the business interruption aspect. Mm-hmm. And it's somebody else's property being damaged that could cause that to happen to me. So is your standard policy going to work for me? So I think that you have to invest time in order to save and time later is really the old adage that works here. Because the discussion you do at the beginning to choose the right broker and quiz them, make them work for it, will save you having much more heated and uncomfortable discussions later when you're not getting what you expected.
Oh, that's great. And I love the fact that I'm not surprised women are probably better brokers. I'm surprised you said that brokers that do more than one are generally more innovative because, I mean, it makes sense the way you described it, but I was thinking depth of specialization. But what you're saying is they may be able to take lessons or insights or models from insurance A and apply it to insurance type B.
Yeah, so where it really works to be an expert is to be an expert in a sector. Because a sector, let's take oil and gas, has to understand how to manage, mitigate, and potentially transfer risk for everything from people damage to property damage to business interruption to patent insurance to overseas travel and kidnapping and political everything. So you can be a deep sector expert and understand multiple risks across the whole spectrum. If you are only a property insurance expert, you do not understand how to insure patents because they're not tangible. So deep expertise is great as long as somebody around them can connect all of those different deep experts to give you that holistic answer. So a good broker should not be a deep expert in one insurance type. They should know all of the types that exist and be able to join up those deep insurance underwriter experts to give you the proper complete picture that you need of your risk transfer mm-hmm. picture.
And they can even say, since you're doing XYZ, do you need this? I mean, it's an upsell, but they might also be protecting you. And what you're saying is take the time up front, which could save you a fortune in money, not just in your policy, but in loss down the road. You may, you could recoup a lot more, right?
Absolutely. And actually, Yeah, it may still sound like an upsell, but you can push back and say, "What? Tell me why you think it would affect me." But the brokers and the underwriters have seen it happen to many more people. So that's where they should share back their knowledge and say, people in your situation with your profile have had this kind of incident. Mm-hmm. Are you comfortable with your level of risk of that? Fine. Or if you're not, then do you want to buy insurance or extend your insurance to cover that?
So in closing, we like to give a bit of career advice to our listeners. So you're really interesting because you spent your life in one career, but you've had your own shifts and wiggles, if you will, along the way, pivots along the way. So what would you suggest to a woman in mid-career, whatever that means to her, who wants to use her education and her experience and her passion for making a difference in her career? She wants to get ahead. She wants to make money. She's ambitious. So it's not just go work for a nonprofit, or not just volunteer, so to speak. But they want to do this in their career. What would you suggest to her?
So I would begin with, what is your passion? So whatever you're passionate about, you're probably going to be doing really well. So understand and don't be ashamed of your passion, and then see where that passion and the purpose fits into the business that you are working in. And it might not be exactly what you're doing right now, but there might be other parts of the company that are doing that. Get involved. Look for links between what you do and that passion that you have, or that sense of purpose that you would like to see in your company. So for me, it is, insurance could just be a cost, but actually I think it can incentivize people to understand and mitigate their risk better, to become more resilient communities so that they're not reliant on insurance and jumping from one disaster to another. So then I said, well, where is our CSR, where is our corporate social responsibility going? And then evolved that into, what is our environmental and social governance aspect of it? And again, evolved that up into, how can we really make insurance an incentive for doing better, as opposed to just a payout when the worst thing happens? But that was a series of links, a series of get involved, learn a bit more, move on, step it up. And so in short, which is what you asked for, I would say listen, watch, dream, and then for how do you move into that? Story. Tell the story. You're the heroine of your own story. Take it out of the subjective, because that's quite hard to talk about, and tell your story in the context of that company you're in or want to be in, and say how you, the heroine, can make that story so much better for the company, for their clients, for whatever it is that your goal or your purpose is. But the key to success, I would say, is be curious and be open-minded and help out wherever you can, because you will learn all on every experience you do, add that to your learning, but be curious.
Oh, I love that. That's great. Yes, absolutely. Listen, watch, and be open-minded, and dream. That's great. That's great. Well, thank you so much, Tina. I could talk to you for about 5 hours about all of this stuff. Thank you for sharing your knowledge with us. It's obvious that the depth of your knowledge and your passion for making insurance into something positive instead of just something we sort of have to deal with.
Yes, and I don't think that is dreaming. I do think that's what it was and what it should be. And that old story of, you can make money out of doing things well. I'm a great fan of this concept called obliquity. So here's another book for you. John Kay wrote it, Obliquity, How Our Goals Are Best Achieved Indirectly.
Oh.
So if you aim to deliver an amazing, this is how I interpret it for business, if you aim to deliver an amazing service, an amazing product, it is no surprise you'll also make profit. But if you aim to deliver profit, you're unlikely to deliver the highest quality of product or service.
Oh, I might have to pick that one up. That's a great book. I love that idea. That's really terrific. Thank you, Tina. I appreciate that. So thank you so much for joining us today on Green Connections Radio, Tina Kirby of Insurance Innovators. So what are your insurance challenges? If you lost your home or business in a natural disaster, how did you deal with the insurance issues? Tweet it to us at Joan Michelson or post it on our Facebook page and like the page while you're there. And thank you for leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you like to listen to podcasts. And please pass it on to your friends. And remember, if you want to gain some career support, please email us as well. I'm Joan Michelson. Thank you for joining us. See you next time.